Guillermo.
Welcome, everyone. We are up and running again. It's Wednesday night. It's just after 7 p.m. here on the west coast of on this tiny ball that we are rotating around on. And we're starting up again, and we're taking a different course this time. We're going to be working our way through the book called Joy of Sacrifice. Joy of Sacrifice was written by E.J. Gold in the, actually, the late 70s. It was published. Parts of it were actually come out as the Sacrifices, what was that, Ivan?
The Book of Sacrifices.
Book of Sacrifices, which are collected among many, many other wonderful writings in the Hidden Work. So, hopefully... I've been asked
to
pause.
For a word from our sponsor.
Who is our sponsor, by the way?
Oh, well, we can just pause and look.
But... Max, this is a moment brought to us by Max.
Max, this is a moment brought to us by
Max. Now we are no longer pausing, apparently.
Oh, good.
So you're very welcome. Now, here's the deal. When I decided to do this class again, this is the first time I've been through the book Joy of Sacrifice in public or with a group. I wondered, how do I approach this? What is it? What is the way to approach this material? And first of all, truth be told, everybody that is participating right now is really not a neophyte. We're not talking with beginners. We're talking about people like Simon Templar is here and a number of others who have been through a long course on practical work on self, followed by a long course on the human biological machine. We have data, we have material that's here already. So we're not going to take this one in terms of like, I do the reading and then that's it. I want to get us to a point eventually, it might take a few weeks, where this is a practicum. This is a practicum when we're working together based on the material that we're going to see in this book here. Now, I'm going to pose a question. And the example of it came up for me at the dinner when somebody said, boy, they really liked The Joy of Sacrifice. They really liked this book. Mm-hmm. And among maybe all of the books written by E.J. Gold, it would be the only book they would keep. They know it would be a book that endured with them. Why did that person like it so much? What was it about this material that attracts us to it? What is it we're looking for when we open up a book like this? It's one thing to open up a book like HBM. HBM is a textbook. It's a book of technical philosophy and how the human biological machine works and how it interplays with the essential self. We spend many weeks going through that, and Ivan, you shared that feed a few times on that course as well. As did Marianne, who isn't joining us this week, and she might be back soon. So, this is a different type of course. It's a different type of interaction. And as we go through it, the key is what is unique about it, and what is it about this that we're holding on to? What is it that is the kernel, what is the diamond of great value? That's pearl. The diamond of great value that we're seeking for here. Okay? We'll hold that question as we go through this material. I am gonna start out by reading some things. I'm actually gonna start in the introduction. I was hoping that everybody would have had a chance to read through the entire what I call the introductory pages which is 142 pages. And you might say, well, that's a lot of reading. No, it isn't. No, it isn't.
Large print.
Not only is it large print, we're talking about maybe an hour or two of work. Okay? This is not a great sacrifice to have gone through that material. If you go through the material, guess what? We all come prepared. And when we all come prepared, we have something then to share and to offer into the class. We have material that we bring from our own environment that we share with others. So, but the part that's actually labeled as introduction was written by Samuel Avital. And I'm turning to the very end of it. As I read, notate what it feels like to hear the words, what's going on when you hear the words. I'm starting on page unnumbered, but in the middle of the page it's Hear, O Vision, This. Hear, O Vision, This. I see many years sitting in the great valley listening. So many years that have legs and hands and heels, they can hear from every pore of the skin. The voice coming from behind the mountains to the ears sitting in the valley says, hear. They don't ask what, they just want to hear. They are present, ready to hear every single word. The voice is vibrant, from rocks of mountains to the hollow space of valleys and inner eardrums. The sound cannot be heard by human ears, only by the inner ear. And the voice says again, the days are counted. The days are counted. The earth supports its children in silence and gives abundance. Plenty of food to feed the physical bodies, planets, plants, all living things. And so the earth listens and thanks all who feed her and assist her to be pure, to suffering of earthquakes, to every sound possible. And the ears that sit in the valley listen and begin the dance of listening. Thousands of ears dancing, the dance silent. Hearing the voice that calls man to return back to its essential living, and the voice fades and fades beyond the rocks until it evaporates, like a flying eagle of the plains. The ears walk from the valley to every corner of the earth to give out to all who want to hear that which they receive. And it will take time until the hearing is digested. And I say again, and it will take time until the hearing is digested. Time to begin to act while the iron is hot, to do things now. And it is said, if not now, when? This is the time to hear. Listen. I hope this letter, I can continue on page one now. I hope this letter finds you in the best of health and well on your way towards taking an active part in the work. We here wish with all our being for each of you to succeed in this great aim. Allow me now to explain to you some ideas about the beginning stages of your work to help meet the obligation of human beings for the fulfillment of God's plan for human beings on the planet Earth. Where are we right now? Where have we been placed? Where has the author taken us and placed us? What does it feel like? What does it feel like right now to be in the space that you are? these words, and it says, "Allow me to explain to you some ideas about the beginning stages of your work to help me the obligation of a human being for the fulfillment of God's plan." We're not in Kansas anymore, are we?
Well, what do folks out there think about this?
To
begin with, the letter isn't coming from Kansas.
Well, we know the letter is coming, you know, there's an address from the letter too. And it's maybe that's intent. But where are we? Where is this putting us? Jumping ahead.
For the moment.
It allows us to actively participate in self-evolution by fusing the intellectual, emotional, and physical centers into a single, unified presence through the process of intentional suffering. Now, did we not cover this in HPM and really in Practical Work on Self? We hinted at it as well. So now we're something different is going on, okay? So we're referring back to what we've already learned. There's something new now. We're talking about it. We're using words like unified presence and intentional suffering to perfect ourselves through conscious labors and to attain crystallization of the soul through the process of the collection and transformation of higher substances. So we're suddenly being placed in a place that is not of the world. The word, the tenor, the focus, the poetics of the writing itself take us out of that. Takes us out of the mental center. Places us somewhere else. It places us in another moment. And it's in that moment that we can begin to hear some of these words in a different place. So right now, what's important, not for what's important for what I say, but it's important to note something. And for each of us to note right now, like a sensing, to sense a specific place where you are. What is going on right now when you hear these words of voice? Time to digest what you have heard. The days are counted. Intentional suffering. Intentional sacrificial work. That faith. What does it feel like? What is the sensing mechanism? Use your sensing mechanism. Sense now. Not what I am saying, but sense what is in you at the moment. Notate it. Notate your inner sensing. That is a roadmap. Roadmap, but it's a roadmap that is not from a linear mind. It's a roadmap that comes from, not a good word at the moment, but from like our sense of intuition. It's truly coming from the awakened essential self. And that's in fact the self. So, higher being is activated. So I'm at the bottom of page 4. Because of this unique property, being human, we have the chance to perfect ourselves automatically through the means of taking upon ourselves special obligations. Hearing these words, if they are heard in your mental centrum, fall flat. They just, in a certain way, we have to surrender to the tonality of the words that are being brought to us. Let them hit us in a different space, because then we can be different. The reason that we respond to these words is not because, oh yeah, I understand that. to respond to them because they're hitting a specific fabric within us. Notate that fabric. That second grade work, okay? We went through the HPM and all of that. Now it's time to start owning some of this. Owning the work that we've already done for over a year now. It's now obligation time. And we start to take that on. And more can come of it. Then work can begin. Just jump in at any time, Ivan.
Okay.
Okay, I'm jumping ahead to page 9 at the very end of that paragraph.
David, can I ask something actually?
Yeah,
you go there?
Please.
I wonder what is people's response to, because of this unique property, we have the chance to perfect ourselves automatically.
Do you want to talk about interpretation or people's reaction to that?
I'm wondering, it seems a little unusual in relation to the other book. The idea of the chance to perfect ourselves automatically.
Okay, now she said, I think that you're hitting a core principle of this particular book. All right?
Perhaps.
And we'll cycle through this particular principle over and over again. Because it's not enough to understand it in a linear manner. But think, how could it possibly be automatic that I could create this cycle? Let's see, where are you? So, chance to perfect ourselves automatically. How could it be we're talking about the battle that we're having with the sleeping machine? It's a very battle that is sitting there day by moment with our sleeping machine, the powerful sleeping machine, and the utter reign of the ego. So how could it be automatic?
That's what I was wondering. We're talking about, they spend a lot of time talking about attention exercises.
Does this mean that there's a way I can do it for free?
Yeah, right. I mean, maybe it's coin operated.
Is it coin operated? Read the second part of the sentence, please.
Through the means of taking upon special obligation,
What does it mean to you? Tell me what it means to you to take on a special obligation.
This is Mark in Winnipeg.
Yes, Mark. Hi, Mark. David here.
Yeah, David. Ivan. Is that Ivan?
Yes.
Hi, Mark.
Yes.
Okay, I get a little delay in the audio here. Just a minute.
Okay,
I guess it was pretty close. It's pretty accurate to what you were saying in terms of reading. It took me about 1.75 hours to get through that material, and I hadn't read it in quite a while. In terms of this book and in terms of the Hypnological Machine, this affects me in my solar plexus. It is very visceral. It affects me in the muscles and my breathing, my sensing, and it is quite palpable with respect to the sensory apparatus with respect to obligation and sensing, and that's how it definitely distinguishes itself from the HP. Very mental, very interesting, and very illuminating for me.
Yeah, and I think it's important, Mark, and for all of us, it's important to absorb that material. It's important for us to do that kind of work, too. I happen to be very interested in, for some reason, in the Hasidic Jews and the movement of the Hasidic Jews. Fundamental in the history of the Jewish movement then, was scholarship. Is this right?
Well, they were the people of the book.
They're the people of the book. They read and studied. And that's part of what we must do also. So it's important to have the foundation, which is HCM, to read an HCM. I call it a technical manual. You have to open up the technical manual from time to time. But as Mark's saying, he read through this thing and it came in a different way. Now, Mark and all of us actually at this moment have a chance to notate that. Mark internally for yourself that point. What are you sensing right now? We haven't answered Ivan's question. What does it mean about taking upon ourselves a special obligation? We are not here talking about beginning individuals, folks. We're talking about people who have been down the road. Some of the people that are on this chat right now, that are on the phone, have been doing this work for many years. So what does it mean to take on special obligations? And how in the world does it relate to automatic perfection? My goodness.
David?
Yes, sir.
This is Eric in Nuevo, California.
Eric, greetings. You finally have the answer.
So, to answer your question, Ivan, just for myself, I had not read this book, by the way, including the passage you're talking about. To take on the special obligation is to dedicate my resources to a higher job or purpose. And although I don't have an answer for how that relates to automatic, I have observed that sometimes when I put myself in the position, I take an obligation to be of service in the work in a particular way, then what I need is there. It's like I'm doing the thing. And I may not be a brilliant at it or whatever it is, but I'm able to do it. And it's as though just something is taking over. And, well, it's me. I have to exercise effort. At the same time, there's something there that informs me while I'm doing that. That seems not to come from me.
Well, yes, it does come from you. It doesn't come from your historical personality. It doesn't come from your giant ego. or my giant ego, which is virtually infinite, it's here. Virtually. But it does come from something called able to take on special obligations. Now, we don't need to get all woo-woo here about that, but because what we can do, because I'm the guy that always is going to use the word, and you'll see this as we get into the sacrifices, because I have read through them, and it's an interesting thing. It's not, can you do the sacrifice all the way through? But my question is going to be much more damaging. The question is, what can you do? So maybe you can't take on sacred obligation, or what is it called?
Special obligation.
But what can you do? How can you defeat yourself right now? Acquiesce to the concept of special obligation. What do you have right this minute in your life as it is, believe me, what gift can you offer forward? Now, unfortunately, if you read through HBM, you actually know something about attention. And presence. And if that's the case, then you can do that. Okay? I guess we'll just push on.
Yeah, okay, unless you want to dwell on a particular point here.
I'm happy to dwell on anything.
Well, let me just ask Eric. So, Eric, what you're saying there is that you have an experience of taking medication, is that right?
David.
I think so, Ivan.
David.
So just briefly, so just repeat for me, what is the obligation that you feel that you took on?
I'll just give one example. Maybe you know Coyote, who does storytelling in the Toltec Mine. Like many, several years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, he asked me to sit in that chair and deliver a telling when he wasn't going to be able to be there. And I have I can't hold a candle to him in that regard, but I agreed to do it. And I found that once I did do that, you know, I just put myself there, then I was able to deliver something of value. I don't know that, you know, it certainly wasn't Coyote's telling, but it was something of value, and I was able to hold that space for a short time.
Now, here's the trigger, is that at a certain moment, Eric, I think if I heard you right, Eric, you said, I was willing to do that. At that moment, you step across the line. And we'll get into this in much more detail as we go through particular sacrifices later. But that was a form of sacrifice. But what I really want to do here is I want to say, what are you sacrificing for what? And you're sacrificing the comfort of your historical personality, the sleeping machine, to be in the higher for a little while. And it can be magical. It can be utterly magical. I've told this story before. I'll tell it again. When I was early on, when I first met EJ, I went to a gift show in San Francisco at the Moscone Center. And he was selling ancient jewelry. And I happened to have a real love of selling ancient jewelry. So he invited me to the gift show, and I went. And so I hadn't met them yet. They were already there. I got there a day late. So I checked into the convention, and I found their booth, right? You know, just wove my way down, and I finally found the booth. And I got to the their actual booth. It was set up, and behind the counter, the selling counter, EJ was speaking to a particular lady. She was a buyer from a jewelry store, and he was just going on and on about, you know, the details of the ancient jewelry, the stones, da da da. Now, I had had maybe about 6 months' experience selling these on my own. And when I did that in Colorado and a couple of other people. So I'm standing there in the booth next to him. And he's going on at about, 90 miles a minute. And on and on and on. And he turns to me in mid-sentence, in a sense, explaining this to her, and he says, "Right, David?" And I said, I nodded, and then he goes, and then he leaves the booth. Now, in an unusual moment that exploded for me, I became serious. Thinking there's nothing I can do. What am I going to possibly do? I can't talk. I don't even know what he said to her. But within, I don't know, X amount of time, I just began speaking. I began speaking from the little data that I did in fact have. And the odd thing was, she didn't notice a break in the action. I did, But she did it.
I see.
Go ahead, Simon.
I was just thinking of there was a question that said what it makes it automatic. That would say, well, technically, I don't know exactly automatic, but what I do know is that this map that EJ has given us with these 19 sacrifices is a huge, valuable map of mining the cornerstones in which our personality has been based. It's like the huge roots in which the forest of the historical personality has been built off.
Yes.
So attacking, it's like a super fuel. I think going into those sacrifices in whatever way we can is attacking directly into the root of the matter.
I'm very, very, very anxious to get to the sacrifices themselves, Simon.
Yeah, right. We can spend a long time on this introduction.
And the introduction and stuff. Yeah. And we will spend some time on it, maybe two or three classes. But I'm not going to let this question go.
I think we should continue. I think we should, simmer that. Like, let that one sit. The use of the word automatic is very interesting to me. It's not mechanical.
It
doesn't mean mechanical, but it's saying automatic. It's indicating
inevitability. Everything to do with the second part of the sentence. It will be revealed to us as we get deeper into the sacrifices themselves how that part works. And it's worthy. It's a worthy effort. But it's worth it to, we won't forget that, but just at the bottom of that page, the next page, 7, okay, I'm just jumping ahead to...
Yeah, you were starting another passage.
Yeah, but now I'm going to go to page 13, and I'm at the bottom of it, and because some people don't have their books yet, he's talking about the psyche and how we bounce around in our mechanical machine and that to go from self to self in a certain way. This is not sufficient time to accomplish anything, much less the processes of the collection of higher substances and their perfection and crystallization into a real soul. This is where we're headed. So that's what we're talking about here. That's why we're doing this particular book at the moment. Is this is what we want to focus on, okay? This concept of processing higher substances into a crystallization of permanent soul. We are soul creators, okay? That's what we have. Look how bloody lucky we are. We have this, we came here, we got a machine. Wow, and that gives us a chance to do something with it, okay? And yes, we can. And one of the pinnacles of creation, one of the great pinnacles of creation is soul creation. Can we create a soul? The answer is yes. Yes, we can create a soul. Everybody here can create what we're going to call, I'm technically calling, a soul. But you work at it.
Yeah, not without effort.
Okay, it takes a little effort. That's a lifetime. I heard one person in the HBM class said they've been doing it every single day for 18 and a half years, and there's still a ways to go. Okay, let's jump ahead, page 16. One can learn to live alone, to be alone, even to work alone, but one cannot endure the corridor of madness without help of some kind. Special help is a true function of a school. What the heck does he mean? Order of madness.
Well, actually, you know, in rereading this, yeah, I was taken aback like that because, Mark there was saying, I think it's Mark from Winnipeg, it's been years since I studied this text at all. But it's interesting that in this introduction, the corridor of madness is sounding a whole lot like the process in the Book of the Dead. You know, between live states, the transit state. Sometimes you do what's called the transit state.
So it's something about transit, right?
It's something about the inescapable, inexorable, and fixed process that you go through, you know, and that gives indications here of what, basically, without preparation, if you don't prepare, if there's no preparation, no help, then it's going to just send you for a loop. You go right back to the mechanical life. Recycle, basically.
Okay.
Describes recycling.
Okay, so there's something quarter of madness. Okay, does anybody else want to take a shot at that? Either type it in, or and Simon will read it, or anybody else on the phone. What could be meant by, and I have entered the corridor of madness?
Well, David. Hello?
Yep, yep, I hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, well, that was one of the, as I was reading, that was one of the things that struck me the most, the corridor of madness. And I guess you ask, one of the sacrifices, the one that strikes you the most? Remember that you asked that in the mail?
Yeah.
And I perhaps it will be that, to lose my sanity. I mean, all the sacrifices are really challenging. But to lose my discernment, my sanity, and I guess the corridor of madness, and that was the thing that struck me the most, you know? We are at the gate, these exercises will put us at the gate of the corridor of madness, which is, in any case, we are not dead, and it's going to happen here, in this reality. So I guess my point in the corridor of madness is when our whole system, our psychic and everything start collapsing down. And that's what is very important, that doesn't happen by ourselves, being alone, without the help of somebody who has the, at least like Hansel and Gretel, has been dropping the, like in the tale, guiding the path.
Okay,
because if that happens to you alone, I think we are lost.
Well, so here we are. We're on the phone. We're on the computer, on the live stream, and so on and so forth. But what do we have? We're not sitting here in a group, like living together, working together in a group. We're all over the country, and in some cases, in other countries. So back to the question of what can you do now? What do you have? What you have is this group. And in group mind, in surrendering to the group mind in a certain way, that you can make yourself available. Once you know that that is available to you, you can take certain steps. You can take certain steps, and we'll get to those steps. Part of what's going to happen when we get to sacrifices 0 to 18 is, I'm going to be saying, what is specifically how you operate in that sacrifice? What are you exactly doing?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be uncomfortable. And the first sacrifice, you know, we don't want to go there. We don't want to be, sacrifice of the peace of mind is number 0. That's before we can even start. But the fact that you've come here tonight, the fact that you're here for any reason, means that you're willing to do that. I met with somebody today that had a particular issue, and I'll just say that in a certain way, she's all embarrassed for this and this and that, but the bottom line of it is she's willing to approach it. So we're here together amongst co-workers walking down the path, and that's what we have to work with today. We can surrender to that. Okay?
So, David, it's Susan.
Hey, Susan.
I think that by being here, the sacrifice of peace of mind has already happened for me.
Yes, my friend. Yeah, because there's no way, and that's part of what I was getting to when we're reading these words. The way they're written, the words are poetic. And for me, the poetic expression, and by that I don't mean the iambic pentameter of the 18th and 19th century English poets necessarily.
Right.
But I mean, by poetic, I mean that we're pulling from our essential self. And as soon as we give the essential self its own flag, so to speak, as soon as we give it its own flag, it's immediately the opposing team comes to bear. The opposing team is the historical personality. And that's our position. Because we know in our heart of hearts that where we want to live is in the area called the essential self. That's our home, guys. That's where our home is. We long, we yearn to be back home. We can get there. And we can do it together, okay? We can do it together. I don't know. It sounds like...
David, let me just say that I would have to... I agree with your use of the word poetic, you know, for this book. I think it is the quality that it has. Look, actually, a lot of the text and the lost works have that poetic quality. But I think another word I would use for that is visceral. It's also this is, you know, there's something about all of EJ's books are really sort of separate the wheat from the chaff. You know, it's like I've experienced this for years. I mean, there are people who love books, who are brilliant, who have read everything you can think of much more than I've read and so on, and they may just be completely puzzled by The Human Biological Machine or Life in the Labyrinth or any of EJ's books. But this book here is sort of like the ultimate essence meter.
Okay.
You know, it's like this book absolutely scares and terrifies most readers. I mean, this book, by the way, speaking from the marketing point of view, this book has been just difficult to market, or like a book for a niche market. This book is impossible to market, and one of the reasons we still have copies to sell you is that, you know, with an optimistic outlook in 1978, I think it was, 77 or 78, 5,000 copies of this book were printed, not even by the Institute. They were printed by the home community, because Lee Loswick and Mr. Lee and actually his whole community loved this book, and they wanted it back and circulate it and so on, and they used it for years. They still use it, I believe, in their groups in the home community. But the point is that it's basically in the bookstore, in the marketplace, on Amazon.com or wherever you want, most people go run screaming from this book. Whereas those of us who are here, you know, reading this and sort of treasuring it like this, what is the reason for that? Well, the reason is that this poetic, visceral essence quality is like, wow, this is a magnet for us. This is fantastic. This is incredible. This is what, you know, for some people, you know, this wasn't the first book that I came across of E.J. Gold, but I'm sure there were some people who picked this up in a secondhand store or somebody thrust it in their hands. Somebody from the home community, for example, put it in their hands to read, and they just, their eyes got wide, and they said, wow, this is the first time I've come across this quality.
I want to...
Of insanity, if you wish, or whatever.
Odd as it may seem, we're getting a little bit close to the end of time. We have like 10 minutes or so. But I want to read two things and emphasize it, and we'll come back to them again next time, that these are the two principles among the other ones that we brought up. Top of page 28, nothing can be accomplished without sacrifices. Nothing can be accomplished without sacrifice. Nothing. And think long and hard on that, and you'll really think on that.
Read the next line.
You go ahead.
If not for the possibility of sacrifice, we could not attain conscious life.
Could not.
If not for the possibility of sacrifice.
So that's, once again, and this is a term I used in the other classes, is that's another tool that we can put on our tool belt. we know that that's given to us, the opportunity to sacrifice. And then I'm on page 49, the only full paragraph there. How can one bring oneself to make the first self-initiated sacrifice that of comfort? One can work in a group, and in this way the group can serve as one's work will until one has will of one's own. This is the game we're playing here then. We're offered this opportunity of sacrifice. But how can I bring, how can I develop enough personal will to do that? I don't know, but if I sit here and I talk to Ivan, I say, here's my sacrifice. He can ask me tomorrow, how's it going with that sacrifice?
Yeah, right. What happened to your sacrifice from last week?
And then I ask him, and yours?
That's right.
So that's, and it's a way of keeping us, it's a way of using what we have, which is the group mind now, to help us achieve some of these first steps. We'll go back over some of the other pages. But Simon, I wanted to give anybody online that has just been typing, if there's anything you'd like to say.
Yeah, there are a couple of comments there, but I just want to add to that. It says there in that page that you were reading that I think it's a very nice angle, and the question is, try to learn what is meant by sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very good. This is, we will expand on that quite a bit, because we cannot accept the life definitions of sacrifice. We can't accept the concept of sacrifice as defined by Judeo-Christian life, okay, and the mechanical life that is. It's got a higher meaning. It's truly sacred work. We'll talk about that, and I'll expand on the actual meaning of the word sacrifice, but we'll do that later. It's not time for that at the moment.
One comment here from Lost Horizon. It says, the task draws the ability forth from within us. Corridor from where to where is the question. Is the madness only in the corridor, or is it an unmasking of madness already present?
That question warrants more than the last 5 minutes. I would hold that question.
And the type of work that we can do here is to take gems like that. What does the corridor of madness mean for me? Specifically, what does it mean for you? Take that and hold that with you. Carry it around in your pocket. What does it mean, and could it mean for you? That would be a good place to start. We have a few more minutes. I'm not saying we're done. But that would be a good place to start next week's class, is what does the corridor of madness, how might it reveal itself in your life, in what you do? Where's the stepping stone of which the next step is the opening of that corridor of madness? Okay? Go ahead, Simon. What else you got?
That's it. Pretty much that's just not really substantial there. Not in particular.
Actually, let me just say that, again, in rereading this material, I was very struck when I read it on page 44 of this background on the zero, sacrifice zero, the beginning point. It says, to make the first sacrifice number zero, the sacrifice of peace of mind, one need do nothing, and indeed one can do nothing. One is at this stage incapable of making efforts of any kind, and so this sacrifice is made for one by those already in the work through direct and indirect influences. And this is, that really struck me as being, in other words, there's two different, this issue there, you know, the fact that one is incapable of making efforts of any kind, I can certainly remember feeling that I'm incapable of making efforts of any kind. But this is where this issue, the one Michelle talks, is very interested in, about gratitude. Somebody had to make an effort in my behalf. Somebody had to do something deliberately, if not deliberately with my name or face in mind. Somebody had to reach out, if it's through direct and indirect influence. Somebody made a communication, sent out an artifact, you know, published a book, you know, made an announcement, put up a poster. Somehow I was struck by something coming from outside, you know, because somehow I was oriented that way or ready for it or whatever. But I actually, this passage reminded me that I should feel gratitude towards the people from this school and the people for basically generations of work in the past, you know, the lineage, for all the people who made an effort in your behalf and in my behalf. You know, because we had to be, there had to be something to call us out of the stream, just to catch our attention in regards to there being another stream of life or something besides the ordinary, you know, that we could move through.
And our attention was...
Ivan?
Yeah.
So this is Mark. I could refer to that as the magnetic centrum. And with respect to what you talked about, the first contact I had with school was like a lightning bolt. I was walking through multi-purpose room at the University of Manitoba, and I saw a poster for the American Book of the Dead. It just riveted me. And something had to be in me to recognize that. Something that I did not create myself.
We don't know. We just know it was there, Mark. And that's the point I want all of us as non-beginners here to own. That we had that beginning point.
Well, the readiness. There had to be a readiness, right? That magnetic center.
That Mark he saw this poster, just a two-dimensional poster, and boom, something happened. And the same with all of us if we tell our stories, how we came to be in different kinds of work efforts and whatnot. But the point is that you need to consider owning that part of yourself too. And at that point, as you start to own that, you start to get a sense of this idea of taking on, as it said, special obligation. Okay? And then when we have this idea of taking on special obligation, we can then begin to understand what it means to begin doing sacrifice. Why are we doing it? Why are we doing it at all? It's contrary to life on the planet. It's different. Life on the planet isn't to make sacrifices, but to do the exact opposite. All of advertising and human behavior is like that. It's to garner materiality, etc. It's to get for me. We're talking about a different way. We pass away from the normal path of life. And we've walked upon a different path at this moment, taking a couple of steps. So the fact that we're in this room together, speaking of the joy of sacrifice, not the joy of sacrifice as a form of effort, it's a form of work that we will be doing for a few weeks here, a couple of months we'll be doing. How to do that and make that part of our work tool. And we're going to have a work belt filled with tools. One of the 18 sacrifices that we'll consciously make will be your tool for transformation. And it'll be a tool you can take everywhere. It'll be portable. And we'll talk about how to do that as we get more and more and more into that area. We're getting, as we get toward the end of the class here, I want to remind people that I have a website set up. It's called ringsofchaos.com, and there's the book Joy of Sacrifice. And I've written one introduction, this on there. I encourage you to go and place comments there. Like, Mark, some of the things that you've said, if you ever get back online, if you can place some of those comments there. Not just for you, but just because then people will come and read it after you, and they'll see those footsteps.
Well, I think it's great to have a basis, say, before we come to have this discussion, on the basis of everybody having shared a set of comments and perhaps even responded to each other's comments. So it just gives you a background.
We get the dialectic going. Because we become, as we work more and more here, you'll sense it. We become a working body. Even though we're just names on a computer screen or voices on a phone. Okay?
Well, David,
forming a body here.
This is, you know, I wasn't able to really, you know, complete the cycle with the human biological machine fund, but I just wanted to verify for myself. This is a study group here, is it not? This is group work that we're doing.
We are doing group work.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually something more than a study group. That is, we're at the third or fourth
grade,
level
of
consideration of,
yeah.
of reflection on these ideas. So.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So,
I think... It's Mark in Winnipeg again. I think that's a great idea, David, is that if we can put our personal work experiences, you know, on the blog and build a work experientiary. That was one of the most important things for me when I first arrived at the Institute and went to work, is to talk to other students about their work dilemmas, how they solve them.
Likewise, I agree, Mark.
And just to know that we're in this, we are all in the same boat together here.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put something down there and you read, gosh, that guy has the same thing I do.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing what I'm doing. My goodness.
Yeah, I like Eric's anecdote,
and
his story for this purpose. Think about what experience have you had? What attempts have you ever made to take on an obligation? Kind of a special obligation.
Nice. Okay, good. Anything else at the moment?
We're going to continue with the quarter of madness idea, aren't we?
We're going to start fresh and new with it next course, next class.
Yeah, why don't we start with that question?
And next class will be next Wednesday, 7 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And I look forward to seeing you all there. And thank you so much for participating this evening. Good night.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Ivan. Thank you, everybody on the line. Great to
thank you, David.